out of the anti-white system and tune in to the pro-white system at radioarian.com.
Hello and welcome to the Daily Nationalist. Today's date is Monday, the 25th of June, 2018. You're listening to me, Sven Longshanks, broadcasting at radioarian.com. It's a solo podcast today, and I thought I'd talk a little bit about a video that I saw over the weekend, an interview. It was actually an interview by Lauren Southern and Brittany Pettibone with Alexander Dugan. Now, I have been critical of Lauren Southern before in the past, and I've spoken about Brittany Pettibone when she was arrested and deported from Britain. And they're not white nationalists. They are conservative journalists. They talk about being traditionalists. But this interview was very, very good. I do recommend people watch it. Not so much for them, but for Alexander Dugan. This is the first time that I've really been able to actually hear him speaking and understand it. There were subtitles, which was a big help. Now, I've heard a lot about Alexander Dugan before, listening to Dr. Matthew Raphael Johnson, and he is probably the best person to go to if you want to learn more about him, because he's read Dugan's books in the Russian that Dugan writes in, and he can understand Russian, so he can translate them. Because when you translate his stuff directly to English, a lot of the time there's a failing, because there just aren't the words in the English language to accurately portray what's being said in the Russian. And I think I could understand where a lot of these misunderstandings occur from watching this interview with him. But some of the stuff that really chimed a bell with me, was when he was talking about how the enemy is modernity. It's actually modernity itself. And I thought about this for a while. You know, everybody's doing stuff on the computers. They're either playing computer games or they're building computer games. And we're talking in the chat rooms, everything we're doing online. And the people that are building the infrastructure that we use online, all that infrastructure, it doesn't actually exist. It's just there in cyberspace. It's nothing. If you were to take the internet away, there would be nothing. Nobody would be creating anything. And the people today wouldn't know how to do anything. If you look back in the past, we used to know how to make our own clothing. We used to know how to make our own shoes. Your father would know how to make his toys for the children. He'd be making wooden toys for them. He'd be building the furniture. People would be building their own houses. You still see this today with the Amish when they get together and build a barn. And all these practical skills that people used to have. I mean, people used to do all their own mechanicking work on the car. They didn't used to take the car to a mechanic. They used to have to do it all themselves. A lot of people knew how to weld for themselves. A lot of these jobs that are specialized jobs today, a young man just knew how to do all these things. He would be taught some of them at school. He'd be taught them by his dad. He'd learn how to do these things. And nowadays, people just aren't learning how to do this. I mean, how many people know how to repair their own clothes? You know, people just go out and buy new clothes. And all the intellectual capital is being spent online. It's being spent in cyberspace. It's not actually creating anything at all. And I think we're missing out from the world around us like this. If you look back in the past, our technology that we would use, it was all based on animals, really. It's based on using mules and using bulls to tow the plow, using horses to horse and cart. It was all about using the natural world, real world things. and getting good at what you did. And now everything is just done online. It's all in cyberspace. It all amounts to absolutely nothing. I mean, we may think we are progressing, but we're not actually progressing in the real world. Nobody's getting any better at doing things, practical things that are actually of any use. It's all just in this imaginary space online. And the world itself is imaginary. I'm not talking about the earth that we, you know, that we're grounded to, but the actual world that we live in, the world of civilization, the world of the white man, that's imaginary in itself. But this is taking it one step further. It's not just in your mind. You've got everything is on a computer. It's all in cyberspace. It doesn't really exist. And I think that's the sort of thing that he was referring to in this when he's saying that modernity itself is the enemy. This is where we have ended up with, and by doing so, we have lost our identity. We've lost our identity as a people, and we've lost our identity as a race, because we've become caught up in this. And he sees the way to fight against this is to go back to traditionalism, and particularly with Christianity. And he sees that there could be a revival of Christianity. There was a revival of Christianity in Russia after the Iron Curtain fell. And there could be a revival in Christianity in the rest of Europe. The National Socialists tried to do this. They called it positive Christianity. They tried to remove what they saw as Jewish influence from Christianity, which is what we should be doing. I see Christian identity as being the best vehicle for doing that. And Christian identity identifies the Jews as being the devils that Christ said that they were, and removes any of their influence from the Bible and from Christianity, and sees them as the Antichrist. Because the Germans had a different way of doing it. They were unaware that the Jews themselves weren't actually the people of the Old Testament. So they had a different way of doing it. They were going to remove bits from the Bible, which isn't actually necessary. All you have to do is work out who the people are that they're actually talking about in the Bible. And one of the biggest problems that we face today, I think, is with Judaizers. It's with people Judaizing and trying to encourage people to see Christianity as Jewish and Jewish elements to it. And they will amplify any elements that have been mistakenly taken as Jewish. They will amplify them and encourage people to think that they are Jewish, such as things like being told to turn the other cheek. People will say that, oh no, that's Jewish, that is. It's saying that you should be doing that to everyone. You should be doing that to your enemies. Well, no, it's not saying that you should be doing that to your enemies. It's saying that you should only be doing that to your own people. Although the Jews themselves are against the Old Testament, they are against the New Testament as well. They're against the Ten Commandments. They do all they can to silence that. Yet if people will say, oh, the Old Testament is talking about the Jews, they're the chosen people. Again, this is Judaizing. To say that the Jews are the chosen people of the Bible is Judaizing. And it doesn't benefit the white man to be saying that. All that benefits is the Jews. Because it means that Christians, instead of realizing that Jews are the Antichrist, they think that Jews are the chosen people, and if we curse them, we will be cursed ourselves. There's a famous verse in the Old Testament talking about the Israelites, and it says, those who bless you will be blessed, and those who curse you will be cursed. And Zio-Christians and evangelical Christians, they know that verse very well. And this is why they refuse to see the Jews as being the bad guys. They think, oh, the Jews are God's chosen people. And white nationalists that encourage that, they're not helping us. They're really not helping us. What they're actually doing is Judaizing. And we can tell that Christianity wasn't always like this, because we have this word, Judaizing. It's been around since the first century. It even features in the New Testament. So this idea that some people were going to try and portray Christianity as being Jewish, and they were going to try and give a Jewish interpretation to it, that this was known about in the first century, that, that Jews were doing this. So the very fact that we have this word shows that Christianity wasn't always this way, and that there were people that, that were trying to push that on it. And it's a symptom of this modernity, is thinking that we are above, we're above all the laws of the Old Testament now. We don't need to make homosexuality illegal. We know better than them. And it's just hubris, it's arrogance to think that we know better than our ancestors. Because things don't get better, they don't improve over time, they break down, they decay, they get worse over time. This is another thing that Dugin brought up in the interview, that because people think we're progressing all the time and we're getting better all the time, we're actually not. I mean, I look at things as if they had a perfect beginning, and then ever since then they've been getting worse and worse. And Adolf Hitler is often spoken about as being the man against time, because he was trying to prevent this progress, this inevitable decay, this fall from perfection. And that's what the fall is. You talk about the fall in the Garden of Eden and the fall of man. It's a falling away from perfection. And it's a continuous falling away as well. Some of the other interesting subjects Dugin talked about, eternity and living in the now and the present that we're in. And if we can connect with our ancestors, then we are, in actual effect, connecting with eternity. And by looking back into the past, looking back into tradition, we can find new ways of doing things today, which link us to eternity. We are encouraged today to see ourselves as these atomized individuals that we should just be doing whatever we feel like doing for the benefit of ourselves, cut off from everyone else as if we're these separate islands. And democracy encourages people to think in that way. It says you should be voting for whoever you think is going to be doing the best for you. Don't think about other people. Just vote for whoever is going to be doing the best for you. So that encourages us to think selfishly, to just think for ourselves and not care about the people around us. And of course, this fits in with multiculturalism. Well, why would you care about the people around you? You know, they're not even of your own race. So you should just be caring about yourself, which is a very selfish way to think. And it means that you're not actually going to find contentment, because you can't make yourself happy. The only people you can make happier are other people. You can do things for other people and that will make them happy, and they can do things for you and that will make you happy. And we are wired up to experience joy when other people do things for us, and that reinforces it, and that should be encouraging us to do things for other people. This is where our sense of altruism comes from. And of course, that's been hijacked as well. It's become pathological altruism. It's we are encouraged to apply it to others that are not of our own race. And again, this willful misinterpretation of Christianity comes into that with this love your enemies. Now, I did a series of podcasts with Florian Geyer based on the Sermon on the Mount, which we called the Sermon on the Mound, because it was actually on a mound that Jesus was speaking on. And when he was speaking specifically to his disciples. That wasn't to everybody. That was to his disciples, to his inner circle. And he was telling his inner circle how they should be treating one another. And you can apply that to a nationalist group. If you're in a nationalist group, you may fall out with people in it. But the good of the nation should take precedence. You should do all you can to mend up those rifts and not hold a grudge against people. If they are genuine and they're fighting the same cause as you are, you will get personality clashes, and you should just try to get on best as you can with them for the good of the nation and for the good of the group. And that's what this love your enemies thing is about. It's saying to the disciples, if you fall out, don't bear a grudge. Don't take one of you to court. I mean, the National Front, they all fell out and took each other to court, and the National Front wasn't able to put forward election candidates for quite a few years because they were having arguments over who actually owned the name. So that's an instance of this sort of thing happening. Dugin was talking about eternity and tapping into eternity, and we can do that by looking at our ancestors and identifying with them. And I see, you know, this is what pagans are trying to do when they talk about being pagans, and they talk about Odin, and they'll try to imitate what they believe the rituals of our pre-Christian ancestors used to be. But they don't know what the rituals used to be. And that isn't a living faith. There is no continuing Odinic faith since that time. Odin's been around since that time. He's been around since that time as Father Christmas. You know, that's what we did with Odin. We turned him into Father Christmas. But the actual religious aspect of it, the ritual aspect of it, that's long gone. We don't know what that was. I mean, we have people that have written down, that wrote down the sagas. We have some ideas. We can look at Hinduism, I guess, and the way that they do things, and the link between the Vedas and the Norse sagas. That there is a link there between Hinduism and Nordicism. But the Hindu religion has been in the hands of brown people for well over 1,000 years. So that's not going to be accurate either. But what we can do is we can look at Christianity, and we can see that even though it has been corrupted, we can still go into these churches that have been standing for 1,000 years, and we can still soak up the feeling of that. We can know that we're standing in our ancestors' footsteps, that this was a holy place to them. And we can try to understand that and try to put ourselves in their position. And, you know, this is why it doesn't make any sense to think that Christianity has always been the way that it is now, because our ancestors wouldn't have gone along with it. I mean, if it was a foreign religion, they wouldn't have gone along with it. Look at the resistance to Islam. There's always been resistance to Islam. If you're going to say that Christianity is an Abrahamic religion, it's the same as Judaism and Islam, well, why did we reject Judaism? Why did we reject Islam then? Why did we spend centuries on the Reconquista to regain Spain? Why did we push the Ottomans out? We did that because it was a foreign religion, because Christianity was a white religion. At the time, there was connections, there was trade going all the way from Britain to India. And that part there in the Middle East is right in the center of all of that. It was a big, big part of the Roman Empire, a white empire. So you'll find that Christianity reflects European values. It doesn't reflect Arab values. It doesn't reflect Jewish values. And you can imagine these things, and you can go to these sacred places, and you can imagine being your ancestors and think about the respect that they had, and the awe that they must have actually had for this religion, to spend decades building cathedrals and this great amazing architecture that is actually used to build these cathedrals. And again, when you look at the architecture today, I mean, it's absolutely awful. Dreadful. You know, these buildings that they put up now, they're just ugly. There's none of the magnificence of Gothic architecture. And yet these buildings today, they're being designed by top architects. They're just monstrosities, you know, of glass and steel. And before that, you had these horrible concrete looking things that they were building in the 60s. Some really awful things that they've built. But you can go back even further than that. You can go back and look at megaliths and dolmens, where you've got just three standing stones with a large capstone on top. You can think, well, that's stood for 4,000 years. That has stood in that spot for 4,000 years, and it's been sacred to my ancestors for that length of time, and it is still stood. How many of the buildings that we are putting up today, how many of them are still going to be here in 4,000 years? Some of them aren't even going to be here in 400 years, let alone 4,000. And another thing that Dugin points out is the fact that we are now post left and right. If you look in Britain, if you look at the Conservative Party and the Labour Party, they're not opposites. They haven't both got different ways of doing things. They're both progressive. They both think that diversity is a strength. They both want open borders. It was the Conservative Party that brought in gay marriage and that pushed for acceptance of transgender rights. They're now saying that people can self-identify. They don't even need a doctor to say that they have delusions and everybody else must go along with the delusions. They can just self-declare that they have delusions and everybody else has to go along with it. So there is no real difference between the left and the right. What we have now is people that are adhering to the truth and that are nationalists against the globalists. It's people that follow the truth against people that follow a lie. And he advocates that we find some common ground with the left that are rebelling against the establishment and the right that are rebelling against the establishment. And if you, and what he's really talking about there is national socialism. A nationalism means that you look out for the best interests of the nation, and that's every member of the nation, not just the ones who are of the greatest worth to the nation, but also, you know, the ones that aren't of such great worth to the nation. And that's social justice. That means looking out for those white people who are disabled, looking out for those white people that aren't that bright or aren't that well educated, and helping to find them things that they can do and helping to find ways that they can contribute. And that's social justice, and that's the socialism part of national socialism. It means looking out for the common good, putting the common good before the good of the individual. And that is something that the left claims to do, but the left then extends that to everybody, and you have this this mass humanity, which is, you know, which is breaking down the differences between us and saying, oh, we're all the same. Just because you're, it doesn't matter if you're white and somebody else is black, you're all humans. So you must do what is best for the guy that is black, not what is best for white people, because you are all humans. So again, this is this deceit, pretending that we are all together. And if we are all humans, then we are all the same, and we're all individuals. Once again, you see, it's pushing this idea of all being individuals, even though people would like to say, oh, I'm part of the human race, as if that's one big group. Well, no, because what that means is that you're an individual, because you're not a part of your racial group. You're not a part of your nation. You're not identifying with the people that nurtured you. You are identifying with this mass of people that isn't actually defined by anything at all. And even the word human, I mean, that's a misnomer, because human means to be humane. And it's only the white race that shows humane traits. It's only us that have a sense of justice, a sense of charity, a sense of mercy. You won't find any hints of that appearing in Africa, apart from the white races that were in Africa, for example. So this idea that we're all humans, again, that's a lie. It's an illusion. It's just an idea that exists in people's heads. It has no basis in biological fact. And the reason for pushing that is so that we don't look out for our own people. So we start looking out for other people instead. And you've really comes up with a lot of good ideas in this interview. I'm very grateful to Lauren Southern and Brittany Pettibone for making it. I was quite surprised that they actually did. And you could see from it the reason why this guy has been at the NPI conference, and not sure if he's been at AMREN, but he's talked about by Richard Spencer and, you know, various other people on the alt-right say that he's an influence. And Dr. Matthew Raphael Johnson has, as I say, has spoken about him a lot. And people do misunderstand him. They say that, oh, he's anti-American. But one thing he pointed out as well is that, you know, the American people showed that there are still an American people, because they voted Donald Trump into power. And that was the important thing, not Donald Trump himself, who, as we all know, has turned out to be a puppet. But the very fact that there were enough people in America that voted for him shows that, you know, there are real people left in America. And that's what we're talking about. We're talking about real people and fake people, people that do have an identity, that live in reality, that are searching after the truth, they're the real people. And the people that aren't real are the ones that think that they belong to the human race. The ones that think that our ancestors were fools and that we are so much better than them now. And we know so much more than them and we're so much cleverer than them. And everything is materialistic and it's broken down into what we can see and what we can measure. And anything that we can't see, oh, well, that's just nonsense. That's just fairy tales. It's like this redefining of the word faith. And the Jewish understanding of the word faith is belief in something for which there is no evidence for. Well, that's not what faith is. Faith is confidence that a promise is not going to be broken. That's what faith is. That's what religious faith is. It's confidence. You are confident that God is not going to break his promise to you. And this is very important because it's based on a man's word being his bond. What we say, what comes out of our mouths, you know, we have to keep to our word. That's what honor is all about. And the fact that we believe that God will honor his promises and we are created in the image of God. So we should honor our promises as well. We should keep our word. Our word is our bond. You know, the SS would say, my honor is my loyalty. It's very important that we are honorable and that we speak the truth. So the very fact that they've managed to redefine the word faith, I mean, that is so central to our civilization, is that when we say yes, it means yes, and when we say no, it means no. I mean, our ancestors had so much respect for the truth, so much more respect than we have today. The idea that they would just be writing fiction thousands of years ago is a fantasy when we know how much importance they placed on speaking the truth. I mean, when a king made a new law, he couldn't change that. Because the words had already come out of his mouth. That was it. It was done. And it was the same for just general people. If they were to lie, I mean, that was unheard of. And yet today, you know, people lose count of the amount of times that they lie during the day, telling white lies. And everything is getting worse. It's decaying. It's not getting better. The world has gone through various ages and each age has been worse than the last, and we're now living in this last age. And you know, we are the righteous ones because we are still white. The unrighteous ones interbred with the Aborigines, and they produced your mestizos, your Mexicans, your Chinese, your Indians, your Pakistanis. They're all the results of the white people that were in that country interbreeding with the Aborigines. And us white people that are left, our ancestors refused to breed with the Aborigines. We trekked our way to Europe and we colonized Europe, and we are the last ones left. We are the elect, and our ancestors were righteous, and therefore we are righteous. You know, you think how many generations back you go, and every single one of those generations was white. Every one of your ancestors chose the right person to marry and produce children with if you are white today. And that's something that is so precious. We need to be teaching our people that, and just how precious it is, just what it means to be white, and how that must be passed on undamaged to our offspring. Mainly women need to be learning this. They just don't realize the value of what it is that they have, that they are throwing away when they sleep with Negroes. Anyway, I've gone on a little bit over time here, so I'll just remind you all once again, do check out Lauren Southern's interview with Alexander Dugan. It is very good, and I hope I haven't confused everyone with this podcast, and I hope maybe you get some ideas from at least one part of it. Thank you very much for listening. I'll be back tomorrow with Nat Danelaw. God bless, and hail victory.